explanation and apology yesterday. I've crossed something like 12 time zones in the past few days, so jet lag caught me yesterday. I was very tired, so I laid down thinking of taking a nap for a little while and listening with him. I planned to come and spend the evening with you, but it didn't work out like that. But I feel better now. And while I'm here, we'll be discussing chapter 16 from Canto 1. Chapter 16 is entitled How Parikshit Received the Age of Kali. The previous chapter, 15, is the subject is the Pandavas retiring. Pandavas retire timely is the title of the chapter. The Pandavas get news of Krishna's departure and they return, and there's also some description of the qualities of Maharaj Parikshit. So chapter 16 begins with Maharaj Parikshit now ruling over the world. And the theme, at least the approach that I'm going to take here, is keeping the influence of Kali out. Maharaj Parikshit did that, but Maharaj Parikshit didn't do it alone. Maharaj Parikshit did that with very, very capable assistance of the Brahmins. So part of keeping the influence of Kali out involves a very important component of Vedic culture, and that's the harmony between those who are scripturally, those who are brahminically inclined and those who are organizationally inclined. Very important to have strong harmony. You'll see this as we go along. I'll just point out some of the themes of this. It's the there are two things, well, there's five things that are items of protection that are consistently mentioned in the first canto. I think you all know what they are. Let's see if somebody can identify them. In Vedic culture, it's very important to give protection to five different components or parts of society. What's one of them, one of the kind? One?
Cow
protection. What we in Vedic culture, who else do we consider giving protection to? One. Women, right? Yes? Protection of women? Yes.
Protection of Brahmins.
Protection of Brahmins. Protection of children. I can't hear.
Older persons.
Older persons, okay. I thought you said wolves. Protecting the wolves. Protecting of old persons. Yes, protecting of old persons. So, protection of cows, protection of women, protection of brahmanas, protection of children, protection of old. So out of those five, in this chapter and in the canto, two are given special importance. of those five, two are given special importance. And of those two, one of them is the cause of the other one. So, Brahminical culture, most important. And because it, in part, because it gives support to Brahminical culture, cow protection. Not like one is, they're both in the same priority category, but there's a relationship between them. The cows supply the milk that makes for good brain tissue. Prabhupada always spoke about that. And the milk provides the ghee that's used in yajnas that the brahmanas perform. And so many other things can be said about the value of cow protection. So we'll be discussing that as we go along in this chapter. So, cow protection, Brahminical culture. Protection, Brahminical culture. Because the Kshatriya's position, this is the king, Maharaj Pariksit, the duty of the Kshatriya is to deliver from harm. Kshatriya. Triya, to deliver. Deliver from harm, to give protection. That's the function of the Kshatriya. It's the mentality of the Kshatriya. He sees someone as being hurt or harmed or being abused. They need protection. That's what a Kshatriya does. A Kshatriya provides protection. That's the spirit of a Kshatriya. So the Kshatriya needs to know what is first in the priority of protection. Or the Bhagavatam wants us to understand the root cause of the influence of this age of Kali is the deterioration of these five, and specifically of these two. And so to keep out the influence of the age of Kali, I'm just giving you like high points and we'll go into the details. But when a person who is a trained, not just some elected officer, but someone who's trained in Vedic culture, they understand the Brahminical culture must be protected and the cows must be protected, and that's first and foremost amongst their duty as a Kshatriya. Then they can extend naturally proper protection across the rest of society without the brain and the head and the eyes to see and the mouth to speak. It's a directionless society. Brahmanas are necessary for giving proper guidance to society, and the arms department understands that. We have to give protection to the head. It's very simple. And so the functions that the brahmanas perform and the personalities who actually have those qualifications, and protecting innocent people from those that would take those positions that don't have the qualities, and the whole subject of Brahminical culture is a very, very important part of keeping out the influence of Kali and cow protection. The cow is our mother. The whole chapter will go into this more deeply. But without protection of mother, there's no sense further of protection of women in general. The cow is the mother. And so a society that says, protect my mother but harm the cow, there's something fundamentally wrong. Or love my mother and kill the cow. Fundamentally wrong. And those who are trained in Vedic culture, they understand that. Fundamentally wrong. Not just like tradition, or the Hindus, they like cows, or something like that. There's fundamental principles. The violation of earth. Earth is also a mother. And so much of enterprise is exploiting earth. And exploiting earth to the degree that earth fights back. And they're leaving their next generation, or the generation that follows this generation, with not only no resources, but a very angry Mother Earth, or a terribly polluted Mother Earth. Rivers. The basic, I don't want to go too much into this, because the chapter does. But that's like if your blood is contaminated, if there's infection in your blood, it affects your whole body, doesn't it? Just one little hint at all of this, something that I've of late come in contact with. In America, at one of the universities that I visit, there's one chairman of the mechanical engineering department, just like the fellow across the street here. And he's not only the chairman of his department, he's the head of the robotics division, which is kind of interdisciplinary. And the university where he's working, they're specifically working on robots that go into the area of nuclear reactors, the waste products of nuclear reactors, because people can't go there, they're finished. So the robots go there, and the robots take the waste of the nuclear reactors and put them in metal containers and sealed metal containers, and take those sealed metal containers to a certain place, and then they're carried. And then a group of somebody buries them deep in the ground and then covers the ground. You know, the federal government is fully aware of all this because, you know, there's all these laws and procedures. So they found out that those containers are leaking. And they found that out a couple of decades ago. And what it means is the water table is becoming contaminated with nuclear, whatever you call it, nuclear contamination or radioactive contamination. You know what that means. Water table is radioactive. Lethal levels of radioactive contamination. And what's over here is going to spread all around. Because it's in the water table. It's not just on the surface. And so they have different departments of the federal government. They meet quarterly to decide what to do about the problem. And guess what? They can't make any decision about the problem. According to this is an Indian professor. You know, the obvious thing that minimally they should do is shut down the nuclear power plants, not produce more, before they figure out what to do with what's already in the water table. But there's too much vested interests of people that don't want to shut the power plants down. They got their position from people that got their help and get their position from the money that they get from running the power plant. So they have to, anyway. It's all economic driven. It's not based on what's good for the earth, what's good for their children, what's good for future generations, just what's good for their pocketbook. Money in their pocket and run down the street and leave somebody screaming, and you know, that's in very high levels. That's going to affect the whole population of at least the country. So how this connects to the chapter is when, if there isn't a basic sense of protection of a cow, there's not going to sense protection of Mother Earth either. The cow then becomes subject to whatever is good. Whatever one calculates to be good in terms of economics, that is, just feed the cow some grass, she gives you milk, and when she no longer gives you milk, send her to the slaughterhouse because it's just economically productive to do it. Anyway, I don't want to get too much into the problem part. It's the solution part. The solution part is Vedic culture teaches us that brahmanas and the cows are top of the priority list for protection. And following that, then other types of protection will naturally be part of the psychology of the person whose job it is to give protection. But if you violate those two, then anything else, you know, the others also stand to fold very quickly. So, this is the Srimad Bhagavatam is, in its written form, especially for the age of Kali. Meaning, the Vedas were written, the original Veda divided into four, was in a written form because of the age of Kali. Prior to that, it was one Veda, and people didn't have to write things down because they could just remember them. We have to write things down. Prabhupada taught, very simple, the best way to remember something is write it down. And just a principle, you want to make sure you're going to do something, you write it down and put it in the place where you go and look. But even if you just write it down, it helps you remember that you have to do it. Even if you don't go back and look. There's something they have in studies about, you know, like with when you're in school, you're doing your academics. A more successful score comes from those who are good note takers. Even if you don't go back and study your notes. Because what it means is something that you heard, you have to not only get a concept of it in your mind, but express it in a way that it would be, you can come back later and read it and it makes sense. You put your concept in a very concise and cogent form. It helps bring memory just to write it down. When Vyasa compiled the Vedas and wrote them from the oral to the written form, we know from the earlier chapters of this canto, he compiled also Srimad Bhagavatam under the instruction of Narada. And the subject that's introduced in this first canto and continues is the demise of Maharaj Parikshit, being cursed by the son of a Brahmin. One of the first signs of the entrance of the age of Kali, that is misuse or abuse of Brahminical power. When the Brahmanas become abusive and the Kshatriyas become abusive, that's Kali. The son of Shalik Rishi, named Srini, had Brahminical power, but he didn't know how to properly use Brahminical power, so he abusively used that power. And that's a sign of Kali. The influence of Kali. And when the personality of Kali in the dress of a king was beating on the legs of a bull, that's another, the abuse of the, at least the apparent position of a king. Dressed as a king, harming the bull and cow. So, proper alignment of Brahminical and Kshatriya duties is essential for keeping out the influence of Kali. When there's discord between the two or disrespect between the two, then everything breaks down. you will not get the protection. There's not Brahminical culture, and there won't be cow protection. Right? Not in the proper way. So Maharaj Parikshit is in the lore of Vedic culture. I'll put it as a question. Why is this narration about Maharaj Parikshit so relevant for us today? And one short answer is, he's present during Kali Yuga. He's dealing with what we're dealing with. Only in the very outset, perhaps not as mature and well woven into the fabric of society, but the anomalies of the age of Kali were present. And that's certainly something that we address in our practical lives. The deviations, the deterioration of good qualities, the exhibition of bad character in our present time is abundant. It's like standard. So it's difficult to prosecute a life of purity when the atmosphere is everywhere contaminated. Difficult. But so Maharaj Parikshit is a Vedic king in our modern times, or at least in the age of Kali. So the things that are being said about Maharaj Parikshit are especially relevant. Vedic wisdom is relevant beyond time and circumstance. Especially relevant because Maharaj Parikshit is with us. He's Vedic king when facing the influences of the deterioration of the age of Kali, the influences of Kali. How did he check those influences? So the first verse, that's like an overview of what we're going to be discussing. The first verse reads, Sutta Goswami is speaking, O learned Brahmanas. Sutta is addressing the sages of Naimisharanya, there's many of them. Maharaj Parikshit then began to rule over the world as a great devotee of the Lord, under the instructions of the best of the twice-born Brahmanas. He ruled by those great qualities which were foretold by expert astrologers at the time of his birth. Before the Pandavas retired, chapter 15, we find in the Bhagavatam a description of the qualities of Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Yudhisthira had the name-giving ceremony in the horoscope cast, and so it describes his wonderful qualities. But he was just a baby, just a small infant. So, because, the purport explains, that because he was a great devotee, not just because it said it in his horoscope, because he was a great devotee, those excellent qualities manifested. I'll say it again. Not just because it was in his horoscope. The development of good qualities in the age of Kali comes about following behind one most important quality. The most important quality is that one is situated in unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord. I'll give another example of this. Maybe you can help me with this one. In the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, there's the topic of discussion is there's six questions or six subject matters that Arjuna wants Krishna to explain more. He's already talked about from all of them, but he wants them to. There's, what are those six subjects? What are two of the six subjects to become appearance? Gyanam and Gyanam means knowledge and the object of knowledge. Two others are?
Kshetra,
field of activities, and Kshetra-gya, the knower of the field of activities. And the last two are Purusha and Prakriti. Purusha and Prakriti. Prakriti means material nature, and Purusha is the enjoyer of material nature. He's already discussed those things. He wants to hear more. So he begins, Krishna begins responding by saying, the body is the field of activities, and the knower of the body is the knower of the field of activities. And then he says that there's a second knower, one that knows all fields of activity. That's the supersoul. There's two knowers within one body. One that knows the individual body, one that knows all bodies. They're simultaneously present. And when he addresses the item of knowledge, and then the object of knowledge, the item of knowledge has a whole series of things. Chapter 13, 8, text number 8 through 12. And there's two most outstanding. All of those items of knowledge, when you look at them, they're qualities. Because one who has knowledge has qualities. And one that doesn't have knowledge doesn't have good qualities. In the spiritual sense of what knowledge really is, there may be Professor so-and-so that has some degree. But without, according to the Vedic picture of things, without having proper qualities, he doesn't have what constitutes real knowledge. So what constitutes real knowledge, that was Arjuna's question. There's two most outstanding characteristics that are the symptoms of what is knowledge. What are those two? You know? Huh?
Humility.
The first two that come at the front of the list is humility and pridelessness. But in the purport, first paragraph of the purport, it's a long purport, Prabhupada identifies there are two characteristics, symptoms of knowledge that are the Sanskrit word is svarup lakshana, primary. And then there's tatastha lakshana, secondary, marginal characteristics. The marginal characteristics are supported by the primary characteristic. What are those two characteristics? Yeah. First one. Okay. That's the second one. What's the first one?
Mayi
chananya yogina Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. Right? Does that ring a bell? No. Bhaktir Avyabhichari. Undivided devotion. Mayi Chanamya Yogina Bhaktir Avyabhicharini. Bhaktir Avyabhicharini, undivided devotion to the personality of Godhead. And one can achieve that by what was one you just gave? Acharya Upasana. Right. The acceptance of, and more than the acceptance of, the worship of Acharya. And so those are the svarup lakshana, the essential core. Lakshana means characteristics of knowledge, behind which all other characteristics of knowledge will come, which are all very nice qualities, starting with that list of humility and pridelessness. Because one isn't going to surrender unto and worship an acharya if one has is one is filled with pride. One is an arrogant person is not going to surrender to anybody and worship anybody and respect anybody except their own stuff. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us also. Maharaj Parikshit had wonderful characteristics, wonderful qualities. They were foretold according to the astrological chart, but they manifested because of the primary quality of his being a great devotee. Meaning, conversely, if one does not become so qualified as a great devotee is qualified, then it's very difficult for good qualities to fill one's personality, one's character. They will not enter. That one thing needs to be accomplished, and then the other things can be accomplished. So because he had that quality of being a great devotee, then he had all the good qualities that were identified. The purport also speaks about he had scriptural knowledge. He was fully conversant in the indication of the scriptures. And he was able, by his association with others, to influence them also to understand, to accept, and to live by. Therefore, he was very effective as a king. Without using his sword, he could just use his purity to influence people. And they were happy to be so influenced because they came to a healthy position, a natural, healthy state of well-being. So they wanted to follow him. He was very strong and very learned in the scriptures and was spiritually strong. So those were his qualifications. This is qualifications that are important for keeping out the influence of Kali, the qualifications within the leader. Because he had those three qualifications, he therefore accepted a subordinate position under the Brahmanas. He surrounded himself with learned ministers who gave him advice. Although he already had an understanding, they also had an understanding, and the difference between the Kshatriya and the Brahmana is that Kshatriya, by nature, has to be a little attached. And the Brahmana, by nature, has to be a little detached. A little attached in the sense that they have to take action. And the Brahmana has to, in most circumstances, generally, not take action. But just, like, you know, the head department sees. And it processes and it speaks. But it's not administering. And the Kshatriya department has to see, process, and speak, but also administer. They don't just give advice. They have to execute. In a fitting way of leadership. So, the Kshatriya, this is an important part of keeping out the influence of Kali. The Kshatriya needs to respect. Part of protection is respect. In fact, a core part of protection is respect. Just like protection of women, protection of children, to respect the value that they represent, protection of cows, respect the value that they represent. The children means it's the future of society. The women, in that they're giving support to the male population and they're primarily giving their day-to-day association up for the children. They're helping to shape the future in a very significant way. And therefore, they're valued. Because they're valued, they're protected. And so forth. Respect is a fundamental part of protection. So because Maharaj Parikshit respected the Brahmanas, because that's part of his natural good quality, he's looked to them for advice. And because they were qualified Brahmanas, the advice they gave was according to scripture, not according to politics. They were well versed in the scriptures that gave indication from Manu, Manu Samhita, from Yajnavalkya, from Parashuram, from the Purvi, Dharma Shastras that instruct across time and circumstance, not just dependent upon a particular age and then certain principles appropriate, but not just time-bound principles, but time universal principles. They were very conversant. And they understood how to apply jnanam, vijnanam. It was not just an abstract understanding of things, but they understood how to practically apply, although they weren't involved in the business of practical application. Brahmanas need to be practical, not just cerebral. But they don't require implementation. They require a relationship with administrative-oriented persons who do the implementation, but also have some theoretical and practical understanding. But their duty, Kshatriya's duty, is implementation. Brahmana's duty is to be very, like, finally authoritative in their understanding and the application principles of scripture. Then, in the purport, it discusses some of the further qualifications of the Brahmanas. They have, first, as obvious, they already stated, they have proper knowledge. But they also have proper character. The example that Prabhupada gives is, they don't say, give protection to humans and cut the throats of animals. Rather, they have pandita samadarshana. They see with samadarshis, they see with equal value different parts of society. Or see with equal visions. They see the spiritual identity and the practical application of Vedic principle according to those different temporary identities. So, they have high character. They're self-realized, mentioned in the purport. So, clearly, they know the difference between that which is eternal, soul, and a temporary body. They're not just learned in some theoretical thing, but they understand this, the realm of eternality. They're in touch, that's what Brahmana means. They're in touch with Brahman. They know what is eternal. So the things that they're dealing with is liberating the eternal from the temporary. That's the purpose behind all actions. So in regulating or advising the proper application of scripture, they are mindful of the purpose behind that whole exercise. Not just theoretically, but practically. So this combination of qualified brahmanas that are able to be detached. In other words, Part of the thing that doesn't make Brahminical culture work today is persons that are Brahminically inclined also have to be part of the job market. They have to earn a living because society doesn't value the resource that Brahmanas represent, and therefore they have to employ themselves in some way or another because they're not supported by charity. The kings had it made. They had a perfect brain that didn't cost them any money. I mean, other than the natural forms of charity that they would give to the Brahmins. But you go now to some consultant for this or that, and you pay a lot. Because it's mercantile, it's Vaishya based, it's not Brahminical culture based. So you lose that resource of the Brahmana. The Brahmana then has to be sniffing around for how am I going to maintain myself. Part of the good brain of the Brahmana has to be involved in the business of the Vaishya, their maintenance. So we're far from that ideal in our present circumstance. But we should at least understand the principle and extend support. Now, so much depends. In presenting this whole picture, the Vaishnavas are not literally part of any one of these Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Although they're as devotees of the Lord, especially till they become more purified, our duty is, in fact, as devotees of the Lord, to take up duties in one of these divisions of labor, but not to identify with that position as this is who I am, I'm a Brahmin or a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra. Rather, as devotees of the Lord, take up a particular position. Brahmachari, Gahastha, Vanaprastha, Sannyas, according to the qualifications that we carry and the qualifications that suit the position. So you're in student life, and so the standards of Brahmacharya are appropriate. Which, without going into the details of what that means, I think you all have something of an idea. And at least for one obvious point, there's not intimate association with members of the opposite sex, and at an appropriate stage of life when they enter grihastha life, and then only with one's wife where are there proper intimacies, and otherwise as a Vaishnava, not with others than one's wife. With others than one's wife, they're to be addressed as mother. One doesn't have intimacies with one's mother. There's affection and appreciation and respect, but not intimacies. So, I want to keep on the thread of keeping out the influence of the age of Kali, because that's what this chapter is addressing. Maharishi Parikshit is the emblem of that, and then how he orchestrates his duties is to achieve that purpose. So, within the society, in several cases, Prabhupada uses the term a welfare state. In some places, Prabhupada uses that term in a derogatory sense. In some places, he uses it as an ideal sense. The derogatory sense is where people, like, socialism is a brand of government that provides welfare for the people. It breeds laziness amongst the people. They don't have to do anything and they get everything taken care of. They take that position not because they have some grateful heart, it's just convenience. It breeds a lethargic condition. And with that lethargic condition, it breeds activities of ignorance. It breeds intoxication. It breeds gambling. It breeds criminality. It breeds licentious behavior with the opposite sex. It leads to degradation in the negative sense. The welfare state, Prabhupada would speak in a negative way about that. But in the case of Maharaj Parikshit and other such very qualified kings, they took such good care of their citizens. Mainly they took care of their citizens through their own piety, through their own spiritual influence and the accumulation of their pious deeds. There was bountiful supply in the kingdom because of their piety, and by their spiritual influence they lifted people. And that's the true sense of the welfare state. Necessities were there and spiritual well-being was there by the influence of a pious king. When, for example, it's mentioned, when yagyas were performed, it comes up in this morning's discussion, Maharaj Parikshit performed 3 Ashwamedha yagyas. And when performing yagyas, charity was suitably given to the brahmanas and to everyone. And because everyone received ample charity, Prabhupada explains explicitly, it's like the sun drawing water from the ocean, which gathers in clouds and it distributes in the form of rain, and it runs back into the ocean. Natural cycle. Similarly, as nature has its cycle, the king receives taxes. The king gives protection to the citizens. Because of giving protection to the citizens, he receives taxes. And receiving taxes, when he performs with those taxes, he has the wealth to perform Vedic yagyas, which are costly. And when he performs the Vedic yagyas, he gives in charity to the citizens. He's the rain cloud. That's just distributing what he got from the citizens for their spiritual and their material welfare. So they're very satisfied, and so there's no rebellion. There's no need to go and elect the next guy. There's no need for it, because the person's qualified. The whole system of democratic election comes when people are so dissatisfied because the king is just a cheat. He doesn't have the spiritual or the material qualification. He just takes taxes and lives lavishly and doesn't provide for the citizens. And people become filled with unrest and they want to, the power goes to the people. Election goes to the voters. And they, but it's another cheat. Because the, anyways, let me tell the whole thing. The Vedic system is that there must be qualified kings, very, very, very careful, just as the previous chapters for the qualifications of Maharaj Parikshit. And then there must be great devotees, as well as having their assets of piety. And they must be with qualified brahmanas and take advice from them and be guided by them. That's the system that works nicely. And the other system is going to have it's fraught with problems. It may appear to solve some problems, but actually it's creating many more than those problems it appears to be solving. And that's what we have in the age of Kali. The next verse, text 2, mentions that Maharaj Parikshit married the daughter of King Uttara and begot 4 sons headed by Maharaj Janamejaya. If you're familiar with Mahabharata, for 1 year, the 5 brothers stayed in the care of King Virata, and Arjuna was taking the role of a eunuch who was the dance teacher of the daughter of King Virata. And when the king came to find out through various events that took place that the dance teacher was not a eunuch but was powerful Arjuna, he requested that Arjuna marry his daughter. And Arjuna declined, saying, "Your daughter is young enough to be my daughter. But I have a son who is of age to marry your daughter. Abhimanyu, son of Subhadra and Arjuna. Abhimanyu." So Abhimanyu was married to the daughter of King Virata, and her name was Uttara. But there was also a brother whose name was Uttara. The brother was Uttara and the sister was Uttara. The Maharaj Parikshit was the son of Janamejaya and Uttara. Then he became married to his mother's brother's son, the cousin brother, cousin sister. Now Prabhupada explains that in Vedic culture that was not only was okay, it was considered best, preferable, as long as the two weren't of the same gotra and you understand how all those things work. So, although they're in this age of Kali, that was an arrangement that was made. So, Iravati was her name. The son of King Uttara. Uttara succeeded his father, Virata. So his daughter, the princess, Iravati, married Maharaj Parikshit. And together they had four sons, headed by Janamejaya. There's a little biographical sketch of Janamejaya. When Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die by the bite of the snake bird, he turned the kingdom over to his son, Janamejaya, his eldest son. There were three other brothers, Shurasena, Ugrasena, and Bhimasena Jr. Bhimasena number two. Ugrasena was also an ancestral name. King Ugrasena. Shurasena, also an ancestral name. Bhimasena is Ugrasena. So, but Janamejaya became the king, and when he became the king, he was a very capable, powerful king, like his father. The Brihat Bhagavatamrita is a description of Janamejaya hearing a description of Mahabharata, that is, the activities of his father's grandparents, the Pandavas. From one Brahmin sage. And anyway, so Janamejaya, during one part of his reign as king, he invaded one kingdom, the Ajanta kingdom, to get avenge for the fact that in this Ajanta kingdom there's this group of serpents or snakes, and he wanted to perform a Vedic yajna that would kill all the snakes. And he was pleaded with to not do that. Demigods and sages all descended to the earth and dissuaded him from that yajna. Present in that assembly was Vyasadeva. So Vyasadeva, appreciating the submission of Janamejaya to the sages and the demigods, he requested his disciple, Vaishampayana, to narrate the subject of Mahabharata, for the pleasure of Janmejaya, so he could hear about his ancestors and the life of the Pandavas. And then Janmejaya, this description is here, he requested Vyasadeva for a special benediction. He wanted to see his father one more time. And so Vyasadeva granted him that request, and Maharaj Pariksit came personally into the assembly by the powers of Vyasadeva that took place. And so he worshipped his father and Vyasadeva in a grand festival and distributed profuse charity to all who were present. So what was initially in a revengeful mode turned into a very, very wonderful, wonderful event. Gurus, Kripachari had done this previously for the Pandavas, and there's no indication who specifically was that from. Oh, yes, it is. Maharaj Pariksit. Maharaj Pariksit except Kripachari also. So, the emphasis that Prabhupada makes in the purport here is that even a great powerful person like Maharaj Pariksit, for the purposes of self-realization, submitted himself to a spiritual master. It's not that unqualified people or medium qualified, or it's all persons. That's the point. And Maharaj Pariksit set that example. It's necessary, as we were discussing yesterday, it's not just a matter of reading books and doing good things. The Vedic process is submission. Submission to Krishna means submission to those who represent Krishna. In the Adi Purana, Krishna says, one who claims to be my devotee is not my devotee. The one who is the devotee of my devotee, that's my devotee. Meaning, the same point. There must be submission to Krishna. Surrender to Krishna means surrender to the representatives of Krishna. That is surrender to Krishna. And you can't approach Krishna directly, you approach Krishna through his representatives, and that's his system. And Maharaj Pariksit set that example. And the last verse that I'm going to touch upon is text 4. When Maharaj Pariksit was on his way to conquer the world. Now, he was the emperor of the world. He doesn't need to conquer anything because he's already the emperor. But he was touring specifically for the purpose of seeing how the standards are being upheld. They have this, I don't know if you've heard this, I've heard this. There's a system of management that when you don't just sit behind your desk, you go out and about and you just see how everybody is doing everything. They have an acronym for it. MBWA, management by wandering about, wandering around. So the person that's the manager, he knows what has to get done. So rather than just calling people into his office for some meetings, which is also appropriate, one system of just wandering around and see how everybody's doing things. Part of what the duty of a sannyasi is to do that. Just wander around and see how people are doing things. And then, not just calling a meeting, everybody come to my office and we'll decide how we're going to organize ourselves. That may happen, but just observe the activities that everyone is engaged in. How are they doing their duties nicely? I had an opportunity to get a ride. We're attending some meetings in our farm community in New Vrindavan, West Virginia. New Vrindavan, you've heard that place before. New Vrindavan before. So Prabhupada established a community in America and called it New Vrindavan. He said, in America you have so many New Jersey, New York, New Hampshire. Why not New Vrindavan? Anyway, so Radha Vrindavan, Chandra, the deities, we're conducting some meeting there. And one devotee who had been in the Gurukula for years, they grew up in the Gurukula in West Virginia, New Vrindavan. They gave a few of us a ride to the airport after the meeting. And they were explaining that the previous leader who established a community every day, he would go to all the different departments every day. Even if it was just like stick his head in the door and look around and go and inspect something and then go on to the next place. Everyone understood he's in touch, he's available, he cares, he understands, he knows what's going on. If somebody has a problem, they can approach him. If he sees things that are going off the cliff, he can say, hey, you're going off the cliff, before it falls off the cliff. So they were very much appreciating. We'd come into the Gurukul every day, and all the children would pay their obeisances. I went with them once doing this. It was a good quality that he had that people appreciated in the community. So Maharaj Parikshit was doing that. He was on tour. Specifically, Prabhupada writes, his purpose in going out was to see how things were going on in terms of the godly state. So everybody has their duties. Now how are they doing their duties? Are they upholding their duties? Are they deviating from their duties? Are they complacent and asleep at the wheel? Are things going on nicely? Ramachandra did the same. We go out and about. Incognito. So people would not know who he was. Although with his transcendental Bhagavan qualities and his complexion, sure they could figure it out. But anyways, he would do like that. Deliberately. Not just send somebody. Send like a spy. He would personally go. And experience. And so Prabhupada repeats three times in the purport. There was no self-aggrandizement motivation. It's not like, I want to expand my kingdom. He's already the emperor of the world. His interest was giving protection to religious principles, seeing that people were properly engaged. And I'm just going to read one part of the purport. As soon as Maharaj Parikshit saw that a lower class man in the dress of a king was hurting the legs of a cow and a bull, at once he arrested and punished him. The king, this relates to keeping out the influence of Kali. The king cannot tolerate insults to the most important animal, the cow, nor can he tolerate disrespect for the most important man, the Brahmana. Human civilization means to advance the cause of Brahminical culture and to maintain it. Cow protection is essential. Then he explains why. Basically, cows produce milk, and milk is necessary to sanctify brain tissue so that one can understand higher subject matters as necessary for Brahminical culture. Cows being protected. So he concludes, I'll read it because it's very succinctly stated. First class kings are sure to understand. Maharaj Parikshit, trained as he was, got the scent of the root of all quarrel in the world. And the root of all quarrel in the world is that agents of Kali disrespect or give harm to the cows in Brahminical culture. It's a very important sentence, paragraph. It's in text 4. The life of Maharaj Parikshit is exemplifying a qualified king in the age of Kali. So he has Brahminical culture, he personally honors Brahminical culture, but the attack of the agents of Kali come into Brahminical culture and protection of cows. So to keep out the influence of Kali, one must be especially vigilant. None of us are, as far as I can see, are Kshatriyas by nature. We're of another type. We're an academic type or intellectual type of people, more than we are administrators and go-getters and organizers and that kind of thing. Although each of us may have to organize a little bit. Something. I have to organize a little bit. Different things. You have to organize. Some of us may have to organize some things. You have to organize the microphone. We organize something. She's organizing the kitchen. We organize something. There's a festival and somebody organizes something related to the festival. So there's some administration responsibility that we may in our life carry. But primarily, our position and our training is to see and to give, to set example, to understand, to live by what we understand, to see the anomalies, to see the solutions to those anomalies, to have a clear idea what the practical application is to correct those anomalies, and to speak that message. Now that doesn't go anywhere if there's not persons who are organizers, administrator type people that can hear that advice nicely. Now when somebody comes along that can hear that advice nicely and has Kshatriya skill, it's a very, very good combination. But the root, just is I'll read it again. I'll read the paragraph. The age of Kali means mismanagement and quarrel. Mismanagement because people are misguided and they're very active and they do active things, misguided active things. There's mismanagement and then they quarrel about it. Kali. And the root cause of all mismanagement and quarrel is that worthless men in the modes of lower class men, with the modes of lower class men, who have no higher ambition in life, come to the helm of state management. Such men at the post of a king are sure to first hurt the cow and the Brahminical culture, thereby pushing all society towards hell. Maharaj Parikshit, trained as he was, got the scent of this root cause of all quarrel in the world. Thus, he wanted to stop it from the very beginning. Now, how much in this canto and just in practical life did Prabhupada speak very strongly about and to persons in leadership positions in the world? Government people. He really put it to them. This is your responsibility. Now, it's not just, sitting in the back seat telling the driver, go this way, go that way. He's the head. He's actually a qualified Brahmin. In full sense of the term. But once when asked, one reporter said to Prabhupada, Swamiji, your society is growing so fast. It may not be long before the whole society is Krishna conscious. And then they may want to elect you as the head of the government. And Prabhupada laughed and said, we have no interest in becoming the head of the government. We can give advice to people who are the head of the government. And another, so that should be our role. Our training is having proper vision. And in our own lives, managing the little bit that we manage in our own lives with these principles, respecting Brahminical culture, cow protection, and so forth. Children, elderly, and women, properly respected and protected. The actions of our own lives. Another very important thing Prabhupada indicated was that in order to have a Krishna conscious society, it's not necessary, nor is it even expected, that everyone is going to become Krishna conscious. I'll say it again. Say it in a different way. The lower modes of nature are always going to be there. Not that everyone is going to be attracted to a life of pure devotion. But if there are persons who are pure devotees, and they're even a small percentage, or even in any given place, a reasonable synergy of such people, it's very attractive, and it uplifts the whole society. What's necessary is just respect for that quality. Then let those who have that quality give direction. That's all that's required. A very small percentage. That's something that Prabhupada wanted, was that to improve the social fabric of society in general. Because while we're sitting in here doing what we're doing, Kali is having a party. And it's not leading things in an upwards direction. Leading things in a downward direction. So, it's very important that persons who understand the value of spiritual culture do two things. Live by it, and provide that opportunity in appropriate and tasteful and gradual ways to provide that opportunity for others. It's only a natural, and even for that matter, a gentlemanly thing to do. You see a blind person heading for a ditch, as Prabhupada says, any gentleman is going to have to say something. Excuse me, sir. I know that you're blind, and I don't want to startle you, but you're almost at the edge of the ditch. Please be careful. He said very nicely, without just grabbing the person and shaking them. You can say it nicely, but you have to say something. Not just let him fall in the ditch. So as training in spiritual vision and spiritual quality and spiritual character start to take their root in appropriate, we can even say tactful, we can say effective ways, giving the message to other people, it's just part of the responsibility of that kind of life. It's part of the way of that kind of life. The eyes that see and the brain that processes and the mouth that speaks have to do their part for the rest of the body. And for a social body, that's a function. It's very valuable. While it's a very valuable function, we also have to bear in mind that people don't have respect for Brahminical culture. Therefore, we have to take up some practical situation within society and set exemplary lives, live by theistic conduct, but then also speak. Let your life be a message, but let your words also be a message. At least with those select persons who you can influence a little bit to understand higher principles that are determining the quality of life that we have down here. That's what Bhagavatam, that's what we're doing. You just did it. But the Bhagavatam is just done for us, and we try to reproduce it. There are subtle principles that gross people don't understand at all. And they suffer because they don't understand, they're not abiding by them. The person who is understanding becomes a little refined, can see them very clearly, can live by them, and can try to help influence, by, at least by spiritual influence, help other persons understand them. And in that way, play our little part, individually and collectively, and minimizing the influence of the age of hell, minimizing the disturbances of the personality of Kali, the agents of Kali, keeping out in our own lives and those that we can give some shelter to, some assistance to, keep out the influence of Kali. And there's plenty of it. Any discussion?
Yeah. Maharaj was explaining that Brahman and Gita's Mukhya Kriyas and the same because they are in the Bhagavad Gita.
Yes, it's required to be a little attached. It's not possible to administer with all the difficulties of administration and to the degree of the Brahman to be detached. It's not an encouragement to be attached. It's just reality. So.
In day-to-day life, we also many times the part of many others. When we practice the Brahminical culture, so what should be the guiding line here, believing devotees?
Guiding line as far as attachment, detachment, that particular feature?
Yes.
I think it depends on your capacity, or it depends on your nature. I have seen persons give Brahminical leadership. I've also seen persons give Kshatriya-like leadership. Effectively. So a short answer is it very much depends upon one's nature. It also depends on the circumstance. An example of circumstance is way back when Mayapur was just being formed. I don't know if you've seen, there's a classic painting. It might have been the painting came from a photograph. The photograph was Prabhupada standing in a field giving some instruction to somebody, and then somebody off in the distance plowing the field. And there was just the Krishna, the temple, Radhamadava Mandir. Because originally, before, when you go to Mayapur, you see all the so many things. It was just fields. And then Prabhupada envisioned a temple, and the temple was built. So all around, there was agricultural fields. So Prabhupada had his Western sannyasi disciples to give example to the local village people. He had them out plowing fields behind oxen. And they had never been around oxen, which to speak of agricultural fields in West Bengal. And they were sannyasins. But he had them teaching by example. If they can do, we can do. Was the message. And we should do. Because it's so important, they're doing it. So the line can be teaching by example, doing by example, because what you want is that others understand this is the standard, this is how it's done, and you do it in this way, whether it's plowing the field or doing the arati or whatever the things are, cleaning the floor, whatever the things are that need to be done. So one can maintain a mentality of instructing others by example, and that's brahminical. And a kshatriya is more instructing. You know, it's hands-on also, but it's organizing the intelligence and the labor of others. More the matter of the mode of work that one is suited for. And the circumstance, how well trained people are, how much they can take the next thing and the next thing. Anything else?
Regarding this cooperation in general about meditating and basic principles, there are some people who are closest to me, and
there's some persons who do what?
Who are kind of closely related to me.
Addicted to meat.
Yes. Some people actually whom I know closely. But I also know that they will not like it if I tell them about me.
Right.
So I feel kind of bad. At the same time, I don't know how should we approach with them. Because my telling them, they will not.
Yeah, they'll go the other way.
They will not like it.
Right. Depending upon the circumstance, I mean, the circumstance says a lot. It might be a relative. What can you do? It might be a person who is an acquaintance. So much depends upon the circumstance. But say if it's an acquaintance, one possibility is just to continue to give association on areas that they can have some understanding and some appreciation for and cultivate like that, and be waiting for the opportunity when the strong attachment they have to, and it's not just meeting, it can be any number of different things, where they're willing to hear just by kind association. But then you have to evaluate out of the field of possibilities, are there other possibilities that should be getting more attention than that one? So much depends on circumstance. By association, we can, by giving good association, others can be benefited. Other, you know, in a broad way, so that particular things can then be leveraged if there's some attachment somewhere. You're not a questioning group, huh? Okay. Shri Prabhupada.